years.
They're safer.
Yeah.
Really? Just in that short period. Do you think about what's next in terms of technological advancements?
Yeah. I can't grasp AI
what's here. Farmers, we don't need humans anymore.
It's amazing what they do already.
Right.
Someone I was in a meeting, this was 20 years ago, and they're like, well, what do you see coming in 10 years? I'm like, I'm not understanding what's here now, let alone 10 years, and that was 20 years ago. And like I said, it's what these pieces of equipment can do. It's just mind-boggling. I don't even drive the tractors anymore because it's too computerized for me.
Yeah.
I'm sure your brothers are thankful for that, too.
Yes. My nephews are.
Yeah.
Okay. Senator, I don't know if you
want to
open it up.
So Doug, thank you so much for hosting us at your farm and your leadership with the Soybean Association. That is outstanding and very pertinent to our discussion today. And I want to thank both Matt and Casey for being here today also. And looking out at this beautiful farm, I just think about how much of that agriculture is sort of the backbone in Wisconsin, and farmers that I know work harder than anyone else I know, and with great benefit to our state and our nation, and frankly with soybeans the whole world. And I know that farmers during tough times want markets and opportunities, not handouts from the government. So I want to acknowledge the headwinds that farmers have faced sort of historically, but also currently. You know, natural disasters and Mother Nature, there's no one to blame, but that's something that you have to deal with. Volatile markets, that happens with ups and downs routinely. And low commodity prices can be a real strain on our farmers. But there's some recent actions that also have impacted our soy economy as well as other crops. The trade war. I think about how when President Trump announced that there would be tariffs, a lot of our trading partners announced that there would be retaliatory tariffs. And some of our trading partners said, if you're going to put a 50% or whatever percent tariff on certain products, we're going to find other countries to make deals with and buy from. And so that created a huge impact for our soy farmers. There were also, last summer, there was a bill that President Trump pushed that cut nutrition programs in this country, the largest ever cut to SNAP, and other cuts we saw in USDA. The cumulative effect of some of these created a $15 billion export loss to China since March of last year, and nearly half of that was soybeans. So really significant impact. And all of this is driving up costs, but also driving uncertainty, which is the enemy of farmers and businesses across the board. For planning purposes, you need certainty. And I had one person say, the uncertainty is like a tariff in and of itself. But now recently we've had a lot of major additional impacts. The war in Iran has caused the closing of the Strait of Hormuz, through which about a third of all fertilizer inputs travel. And so farmers have seen an incredible spike in the cost of fertilizer, and sometimes the availability of fertilizer has been in question. A recent survey said that 70% of farmers right now cannot afford all the fertilizer they need for their operations, or so are taking lots of additional steps to see what they can do without and where they can be more tactical and strategic in fertilizing in the planting season. Diesel is up nearly $2 a gallon compared to what it was last year. And again, a lot of our nation, or our world's global supply of oil travels through the Strait of Hormuz, so that's had a shocking impact, both for automobile fuel, jet fuel, but certainly diesel. So it makes it really difficult for farmers to plan. And of course, you're also struck with all the other increases in costs that all families are facing, right? Groceries and housing and childcare and all the things that people struggle with. So on my part, I wanted to just make a couple of things given these challenges. I am opposed to the war in Iran. I feel I feel strongly that it's a war of choice, that we weren't under attack, and so the president went in without congressional authorization. And because of that, and I know I'm getting in the weeds, but because of that, we've been forcing votes on war powers resolutions to contend that the president doesn't have the authority to just declare war on his own. We are actually steadily gaining support, and our last vote right before the Memorial Day recess resulted in 50 in favor, 47 opposed to bringing the war powers resolution to the floor. So we now have a majority in the Senate, but we need more than that to actually drive a vote to bring it to an end. In addition, I'm involved in a number of pieces of legislation regarding the price of fertilizer. I wanted to just highlight the Fertilizer Transparency Act of 2026. This is a bipartisan bill that will give farmers more insight into input costs in real time so that planning can be, so you can rely on that for planning. I've also been involved in a couple of other bipartisan bills relating to fertilizer and looking at some more that might be introduced in the coming months. I'd like to have us more independent, self-sufficient as Americans on fertilizer production. There's been some initiatives to do that. It's a struggle because a lot of the inputs that we rely on are produced in other nations, including Canada, where we have a trade agreement that's being re-evaluated right now. So what I really want to do is elevate the stories of how this is impacting Wisconsin farmers, soybean farmers, corn farmers, and talk about how this is impacting you. And so I want to just start with the question of how you're experiencing the rising fuel, diesel, and fertilizer costs in your operation, sort of happening at the same time as spring planting season, et cetera. And just for folks who aren't in agriculture and aren't on the farm, you know, we're sitting in a location that has a lot of diesel-consuming equipment. Tell me a little bit about what you have on your farms and how much diesel you need throughout the season and what you're doing when it goes up $2 over, a gallon over last year. Doug, do you want to start?
Yeah, I'll start. I mean, here we got our one tractor that we use for strip tilling and multiple other things. That's got a 300-gallon fuel tank on it. And, so we're putting in 200 gallons a day.
Uh-huh.
This year, and we usually go through 6 semi-loads of diesel fuel, off-road diesel fuel in a year.
Uh-huh.
And this year, we didn't go and contract much out because, prices were good and there was no indication that things were going to change.
Right.
So we didn't go, and on our farm, we didn't contract any out. Now that's going to come back and really affect us. Like I said, when you put in, 200 gallons into one tank, that $2 increase, $400, right there. I looked last year, we spent $120,000 in fuel on the farm last year for both equipment and for our trucks. And so this year, that price is going to be about $400. So, I mean, we've got storage here for a semi load each time.
Different practices, but we still burn fuel. springtime, lucky is our loading of fuel. I did the math, and per acre, we're probably going to be spending between $2 and $3 more than that fuel this year. We did have some water early before this all started. Price of sellers $2.33 for unload. But luckily, we didn't go through much. But fall would be a different story because we're in a whole lot of fuel in fall.
Yeah. Well, what sort of equipment do you need it for?
Combines, semis, tractors.
Okay.
Yeah, we're similar to Casey. We don't raise livestock at all. We're purely row crop.
Yep.
And so for us, spring, no-till. So we're not running a bunch of tillage equipment in the spring. We're just running a planter and a sprayer. So our field demand in the spring is low, but it'll ramp up considerably in the fall with harvest. Where I think it does affect guys more is if they're full with tillage or livestock operations making hay, you know, your dairies and stuff, they're running equipment all the time.
Pumping manure is huge.
Yeah, pumping manure and some of these other processes.
Those pumps are field buddies.
Yep.
And thankfully, we have had an increase in commodity price, so that does help us out a little bit. I mean, the bottom comes up, hopefully the top comes up a little bit too, but it makes everything more expensive.
Yeah.
Your lines are under more stress, and yeah.
Well now, we don't have irrigation on our farm, and but irrigators, those are run by diesel pumps and everything.
Okay.
So to water their crops,
yep.
It's costing them a lot more money.
Yeah, we've run ours a couple times, but ours are electric. And then time of day we run, so.
Got it. I want to talk about fertilizer prices, too. But you're saying the price you're getting for the crop is up also. So,
yeah.
Want to talk a little bit about that thing, and the impact on the issue last year when China started buying from other countries. But look, I'm getting ahead of it. Let's talk about fertilizer.
Yeah.
So, how much do you need?
That's much more impactful to us row crop guys is fertilizer. And especially, no secret, I've got a soybean shirt on. Casey's wearing a corn shirt. We both grow. I grow corn. He grows soybeans as well. So in the soybean space, fertilizer is a lower demand.
Mm-hmm.
We've got great soils here in southern Wisconsin.
Yeah.
We're good farmers. We've taken care of the land. So we do have a cushion of certain fertilizers. The big one is, of course, nitrogen for growing corn.
Yeah.
Soil doesn't store it. You need to purchase that every year.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of the one I think a lot of guys are zooming in on right now.
Yeah.
And just ways that we should increase domestic nitrogen production and keep that production here. That's I think the piece of the puzzle that we need to figure out.
Yes.
You know, this goes back to last fall, the P and K that we put down, the phosphorus and potassium that we put down last fall was probably $30 more an acre total than previous years. We have our nutrient levels up where they're supposed to be, so we were able to cut back on certain areas, push other places. This spring and nitrogen. We'll see what happens next year. We're fortunate. We have stuff to be paid. We have to work on the prices of actually less than last year. So we're not fun.
We're always risk managing. It's always, I guess, just not you. What do you think? But I'm just going to risk it.
But when it spikes, like we're seeing, and of course, you know, if you're pre-contracted for it and you're not looking at the spike, you don't have to necessarily make all the adjustments. But when I was visiting a farm a week and a half ago in northern Wisconsin, I mean, he's out testing every field, going, what can I do without this year?
Mm-hmm.
And really, it was micromanaging, is that what you call it? His farm operation.
And there are farmers that are doing that. I mean, majority of farmers buy their, you know, all their inputs, like in December, January.
Yeah.
So most farmers had their stuff paid for this year. But now I was just talking to a guy from the local co-op that works on buying for next year, and they're going to start buying in July for next year's. And they said even if the Iran war stopped right now, Strait of Hormuz was open, it would take 6 months to get things figured out before prices would even think to start coming down. While these co-ops and, you know, different dealers are buying that stuff now at these high prices, and so that's going to be transferred to us when we're buying this December and January. So I mean, this year, yeah, it's an impact, but it's next year that's going to be the big impact.
That's right. And what, would you say most soy and corn farmers would buy in January, December?
The majority of them do, I'd say.
Small operations, maybe not.
Yep. The ones that don't are the ones that are doing canning crops. They're not sure what they're going to, you know, what's going to be in canning crops or what they're going to put in corn or soybeans. Those are the ones that are buying in the spring.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit more about how the trade wars, and especially the cancellation of contracts with China, impacted the demand, the global demand for soy, and how that trickles down to each of your operations. You know, when you hear that China decided to, you know, retaliate for our tariffs and purchase from Argentina, purchase from Brazil, purchase from other countries, what's the impact on each individual operation? Where do you see that? Like, you sell to someone who then sells into the local market, right?
Yeah.
Just explain to a layperson how that works.
And yeah, I mean, we're selling to our local co-ops or local elevators, and they're the ones that are selling to the bigger companies that ship it worldwide.
Yeah.
You know, someone like Matt's got DeLong's close to him that does the worldwide shipping right there. But you know, what I see when it comes down to all this stuff is, like, when China was going back and forth, we're buying, we're not buying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as farmers, we're pretty optimistic people. You know,
things
are going
to
work out. We're going to get through. Yeah, we may have a few bad years here and there, but we're going to have those good years to help us get through and everything.
Yeah.
With stuff that's been going on, I'm seeing less optimism when I talk to my neighbors because, okay, yeah, our prices, they didn't drop dramatically through all this, but we're not seeing that buildup of, okay, in the future, we're going to be, you know, sending, you know, soybeans to China or anything.
So it's kind of a lag effect when you hear those announcements.
Yep, and so, you know, so we're sitting here going, okay, are we going to get the China market back? Probably not. We need to be working on, you know, working on other countries, and whether that's soybeans or corn, we need to be, you know, spreading it out more and not so reliant on one country. And we need to find a lot more domestic uses for our products.
Yeah.
And that way we're not so reliant on the world market.
Yeah. Any other comments on that?
We travel quite a ways for our soybeans. We go down to Joliet on the south side of Chicago. And this year versus last year, they're paying $1.50 more a bushel.
Uh-huh.
It all gets, that's a container market. It all goes, whether it goes to China or Vietnam. I mean, DeLong's goes everywhere. So
yeah.
Who knows where those went.
But right.
In that area, and granted, it's just like a fertilizer. You don't know what's going to happen next year. But
right.
As of right now, the market's up that much compared to what we sold last year.
Me too.
Yeah, our beans, we raise about 1,500 acres of soybeans, and they're split about 500, 500, 500, and I would say about 500 of them are food grades.
Uh-huh.
So those are going to Joliet, going in the container, and those are going to you know, Vietnam, Korea, Japan to be consumed, and that's through DeLong's. 500 of them are going into what I would call the commodity bean market, so that's like your straight export to China or oil. And then we have 500 acres this year for the first time of a unique product that's in the Wisconsin dairy market. And they're crushing it and feeding it to cattle. And that's a really, to me, good opportunity. I mean, it's domestic, and better than domestic, it's Wisconsin. It's going, it's staying right here. And I think we need to make sure we're not putting all of our eggs in one basket.
Right.
To spread this risk out.
Right. I have a question about those. There's
different markets for corn and soy. And there's a big battle that we've been fighting to try to get like E15 year-round that impacts soy and corn differently. How do you watch the various associations, Corn Association and the Soy Association? How do you struggle with those issues?
I mean, I guess I'd say we work together. We have a few little minor disagreements, but I mean, like Matt said before, we're corn growers, we're soybean growers, we grow everything, so we work together a lot. It's not a us versus them type thing.
Yep.
And so, yeah, we watch what's going on. We want what's best, you know, on soybean side, we want what's best for corn because that helps us on our farms. Corn wants what's best for soybeans because, you know, it's helping on everyone's farms. So, I mean, we work more together. And, yeah, when we come out to Washington, D.C., and come in and visit the different offices, we're pretty much saying the same things.
Yep.
You know, if there's been times where one's walked in just before the other and it's the same message.
Yes.
And yeah, corn's got the E15 that, you know, they're working on. Soybean, you got the biodiesel and everything. Like I said, we want to work together and we're not competing with each other.
Yeah.
Thank you for the support of E15. Hopefully,
my pleasure.
Send that through. It's even bigger than E15. It's the whole biofuel in general.
Right.
One should help the other. If E15 passes and that pushes the corn market, soybeans will follow through and have to fight for the acres to make the money and they come up with something too that I'm confident of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I think the, about 5 minutes.
Okay. I think part of the the debate, the E15 year-round, and then stopping granting the waivers to the small refineries that don't want to do the...
On the soybean side, we're, you know, very supportive of E15. But like you said, it's those small refinery exemptions that's going to hurt the soybean market. So that's the one part of the bill that, you know, we have a little issue with. Yes. E15 is a great product. We want that to be used, but we want to make sure that it's not at a detriment to soybeans.
Yeah.
And it's the small refinery exemption part that would be hurting the soybeans, not the E15 itself.
Yeah, yeah. So what are you hearing from your farming neighbors about the costs that are going up? What's the discussion like when you're, you know, you're too busy to be chatting most of the time, but. Especially this time of year. But what are you hearing about how people are starting the increasing prices? Or,
farmers are pretty resilient, pretty adaptable. You know, I think the talk is just always keeping an eye on it. You're keeping an eye on your input costs, you're keeping an eye on the grain market, and you're figuring out where to pull the trigger on each one.
Yep.
And lock in margin if you can. And so we're always upbeat and positive. Usually, you know, you get bummed out for a few days and then something changes or another calamity comes up and it pulls you in that direction.
And when we're talking to neighbors, we're not, you know, well, oh yeah, you know, these prices, you know, aren't good, you know, they're going to impact us, but we don't dwell on it. We sit there, okay, but what's next? What else can we do?
Yeah.
So that's to me, the agricultural society. Let's look at the positives and not focus on the negatives.
When you're, you have your price for this season, how much transparency do you have from the co-op or, you know, the person or the entity you're selling to on what it's going to be in the future? Is that, that's just the... dealing with the volatility or
on markets, I mean, you've got the Chicago Board of Trade, so that's really transparent. You can see out a long ways as far as the contracts go. What the question is what the basis is. Mm-hmm. So that's what they're going to charge you for getting it from the farm to the market. Mm-hmm. And that's what, you know, a lot of guys would guess on that. It's more on the input side that you just don't know. You look at trend lines and what you've paid in years past, but then something happens that makes it spike or change. And then that's where it gets a little bit trickier. You know, you're like, well, is it going to get better or is it going to get worse? And you just kind of eventually, you have to make a decision. So you're just going to take an educated guess. Unless if they've got a crystal ball that I don't have. So.
We definitely don't have a crystal ball here. But yeah, when it comes to markets, you know, we got bids out for contracts for the 2026 year. We got bids out for the 2027 year. So, I mean, stuff we haven't even started looking at input prices yet. We've got bids out there going, okay, here's what we think would be a good price. So we'll start putting those out there. And so, yeah, we've got some both corn and soybeans sold for 2027 already.
Okay. What sort of volatility do you see in seeds prices?
Thankfully, that's the one thing that's pretty much flat.
Yeah.
The last couple of years.
It hasn't changed a lot.
Yep. Yeah, those prices are pretty consistent.
It's a domestic.
Yeah, I mean,
so.
Well, and that's the one thing that generally we can say is better than old seeds of today are better than seeds of 10 years
ago.
Oh,
yeah.
100%. My diesel fuel and my potash are exactly the same that I bought 10 years ago. They're just cost more. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the seed, yeah, that
but the
technology
seed is the technology
that,
is better.
Yes.
The genetics are better. Yeah, you can look at that and say, well, I understand a little bit. And they've been. Well, hopefully, this isn't an invitation for them to raise prices.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you don't want more profiteering or you know, that sort of thing going on. So.
And I mean, on farms, that's our biggest. The biggest thing you hear from people, and our biggest fear is these prices. They go up so fast. But it takes a long time for prices to come back down for our inputs, whether it's fuel, fertilizer, or anything that we're using here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I so appreciate your coming and talking about the impacts of these price increases, sudden scary in terms of how long they're going to stick with us. But I appreciate that and we'll elevate them.
Well,
thank you.
Keep up the fight.
We're here for it. Yeah, I am
too. All right.
I think we're going to do a group photo out by the tractor out here.
Oh, great.